Welcome to The Weekend. I'm Angela Kocherga. Early voting begins Tuesday, and mail-in ballots are already coming into the El Paso County Elections Office. It's a good time to check in with Elections Administrator Lisa Wise about the high level of interest in this election, how to vote, and where this election season. I started our interview via Zoom asking about the last-minute rush to meet the deadline to register to vote this past Monday.
And the postmark is also October 5th. So we're actually still getting some applications in that were put in the mail on Monday. We're also getting some forwarded from like the Texas Secretary of State's office because some people turn theirs in to the state and then they forward them on to us. And we're even still getting reports from the DPS from people that went and made an appointment and updated their license, were able to get in and then change the registration. So that number continues to climb. Every night we update it. Right now we're at 484,057, 484,000. Yesterday we were at 483,000, I think 516. So, you know, we got about 500 more put in there. So that they will still continue to kind of straggle in the next couple days. And as long as they were postmarked, even from somewhere out of the country or something like that, we accept them. So that number will continue to change a little bit, not much. I mean, it will go up a little bit. But yeah, we're almost 60,000 ahead of where we were in 2016. So in 2016, we had about 427,000 registered voters. So, you know, we're encouraged by these numbers because it does seem like even the pandemic is not stopping people's interest in the election. And, you know, all summer we heard, what's it going to look like and how's it going to go? And is anybody going to show up? And so, you know, we're very happy with what we've seen and an interest and that we continue to grow our numbers for registration.
That's great. And we're in an election season now. We probably should look at it like that as opposed to just election day because we have these different forms of voting.
Right.
And we go through some of them. I mean, early voting is starting next week, Tuesday.
Right.
What does that look like for people?
So normally early voting was scheduled to start on Monday, the 19th of October. That would follow the normal schedule for a November election. Because of the pandemic, the governor issued a proclamation in July to start earlier. So we're able to actually start next Tuesday. And we will have 35 locations across the county. We're going to be open. Some of them are 8 to 5, some 9 to 6, some 10 to 7. The last week of early voting, we actually have what we're promoting is 10 till 10. So 10 locations open till 10 p.m. across the county. So that's something new we're doing. We're really trying to get people who may work at night or on the weekends and really give them no excuse not to come out and cast their ballot. So we tried to put something on every corner of the county that we could get. This is something, like I said, we have not done before, but we're hoping it's used so that we can continue to, you know, justify having late hours in the future. So that's going to start next Tuesday. We've already started ballot by mail. Those went out on September 25th, and we've received hundreds and hundreds back already. We're over 30,000 on our requests for ballot by mail. Before this election, our highest number was 12,600. So, I mean, we're definitely seeing an uptick in every way. So we don't know yet if that's all new people who maybe, are wanting to vote by mail, or if that's people who would have normally gone to the polls and now are choosing that option because of the pandemic. I think once we start early voting, that in-person couple few days really gives us the idea of what the turnout's going to look like.
Well, that's a good place to stop and kind of talk about each of those. So the early voting, there was, of course, a fight trying to stop that extra week from being added, but the Supreme Court just ruled that it could go ahead. And
3 weeks, actually. So because of, there normally would have been 2 weeks.
Oh, so the added week is
the 19th through the 30th, right. And so now we added that week on the front end of it. So it'll actually be the 13th of October through the 30th. So there's a lot of time in there to cast their ballot. But yes, that was finally decided by the final court this week. We did get that extra week. I was approved finally for the final time. But yeah, the ballots, again, in that proclamation in July, the governor also issued the drop spot option, right, for the ballot by mail. That's something else that's been in the news and been in the media. And been in the court system. And basically what that does for El Paso County is allows a drop spot here at the courthouse. It usually is only on election day. That's how the code reads. But the proclamation allows us to have it open from basically now until the election day. And we've collected over 400 ballots at our drop spot in person. So we started last Monday, the 28th, because ballots went out the 25th, so we set it up the 28th, and we started collecting. We're curbside downstairs on the east side of the courthouse on Campbell Street, across from the jail. SS, we have a blue canopy. We've got all these signs out there, and there's a poll worker team out there ready to take your ballot. So we've been gauging about 40 to 60 seconds per voter. So they're just pulling up, they're showing their ID, they're signing the log and passing off their ballot, and off they go. So it's been a real, it's been a real positive that we've been using this, and we haven't seen this before because we haven't been allowed to do it. But you know, we're really trying to encourage people to do that, get that ballot in as soon as they can, whether through the mail or if they want to come down and do the drop spot.
Well, you answered a couple of my questions about that, because that is the other dispute. Some large counties wanted multiple boxes, right? But right now, and possibly for the foreseeable future for this election, one spot, and you just told us exactly where that is.
Right.
And those are for the mail-in ballots for people who prefer to use the drop box rather than mail in the ballot.
Right, rather than go through USPS.
Right, the post office. Concerns about that? I mean, people had to request those mail. Explain that process so people understand what they should.
Right. So ballot by mail, you need to qualify. The state of Texas, every state is different. And so people sometimes move here from a state that had no excuse ballot by mail, like I did in Nebraska, and call us and say, why do I have to fill all of this, you know, all this out? I thought I could just put this information and, you know, get a ballot. But in Texas, you have to qualify. And so most of our requests are for the qualification of 65 or over. So if you're 65 or over, you qualify. If you're going to be out of the county on election day and during the early voting in-person period, you can qualify. We will need an address out of the county where we can send that ballot. That's part of the requirement. If you are incarcerated, but your voting rights are still intact, so if you're waiting for a final judgment or you're in jail for maybe misdemeanors or something like that, you still can request a ballot by mail. And then if you're disabled or sick, and that's the other item that we've seen so much in the media for the last couple of months, actually. And that basically came down through the courts again, with the courts ruling really two things, and it's what's the voter's, you know, what the voter can do and what the election administrator can do. So what the courts ruled is that an lack of immunity or fear of COVID alone is not an excuse to request a ballot by mail. However, it should be considered when deciding whether you want to vote by mail or not. The other side of that, though, is for the elections administrator. We have no direction or really anything in the code that allows us to verify that. So, I mean, we're, because of HIPAA, because of the way the codes are written, we aren't able to question someone who says they have a disability and want to vote by mail. So that's kind of on the two sides of what came down from the courts on that question. So that's really the biggest issue we've had with the request on that, is waiting to find out initially if we had to turn people away for marking that, and we don't. That's nothing. If the form is filled out, we are only allowed to view the form in its four corners and take information off of that. So if you qualify, the deadline to turn in a request is October 23rd. So we still have a couple weeks. It needs to be here, not postmarked. So that's how it's a little different than election, the voter registration. And we tell people it needs to be here. But send it, if you want to vote by mail, send it in now. Don't wait till the end. There's always this mad rush of people who know today they want to vote by mail and want, but wait till October 20th or 22nd. And then they realize, oh, they forgot to mark the election or something that they wanted to pick. Or, I mean, that's why we tell people send it in now, because and put your phone number or email on there. We do not give that out. That's not public information. That's for in-house use only. So that if we do have an issue where you forgot to sign it. I mean, we'll have people who forget to sign it. We'll have people who forget to mark the reason that they qualify, you know, anything like that. And so that's why we ask you, fill it out completely, fill it out early, give us time to get back to you and make sure we can get you a ballot. So that deadline is the 23rd. And like I said, we've been receiving hundreds and hundreds of ballots back through the mail and through the drop spot. over 30,000 requests, and we're basically about a two to three day processing point. So I think right now we're on Monday's requests, so we're keeping up with them pretty good. I mean, basically, you should get your ballot within 7 days of requesting it.
That was going to be my next question. You're anticipating everything, which is great, but what happens if somebody doesn't get it back within that time period? I mean, we've heard some misinformation, too, about, oh, you can do that, and then you can go down the polling place. What is the real process here?
Sure. So we're telling people that you should get your ballot 7 days from requesting it. And we've all heard about the USPS and things about the delay. We have not seen that yet here in El Paso. Like I said, we've been seeing a pretty quick turnaround on sending ballots out and getting them back within 3 or 4 days, which would be expected from start to finish. But if for some reason you get your ballot or you don't get your ballot and you decide you want to vote in person rather than vote by mail, there's a couple things that have happened. If you have your ballot and decide, no, you know what, I want to vote in person. You go to the polling site, you surrender that ballot, and then you can vote a regular ballot. That ballot is what we call spoiled. It's kept in the spoiled ballot bag. It's not obviously turned in. If you don't have your ballot, you still can go to the polling site and vote. You'll just have to vote provisional ballot. And that's by code so that we have 6 days just to ensure that ballot that went out of the mail is not returned. Because otherwise, you know, you'd be voting twice, obviously. So those are your options on that. The deadline to get those ballots in, if you still do want to vote by mail, is Election Day, 7 p.m., November 3rd. Or if there's a readable postmark that you got it in the mail prior to that time, we can take it on the 4th by close of business. But that's really pushing it. So, I mean, I try to tell people, one, get it back as soon as possible. Don't let it sit on your table. Don't let orange juice spill on it. We've had people who've called us that their dog got the corner of it, or, you know, their baby got the corner of it. Fill it in, get it back to us. Don't wait till the last minute. There's no reason to do that.
That's the big message this election season. Make a plan.
Make a plan. That's what we've been telling everyone. Plan, plan, plan.
Decide how you want to vote. Give yourself enough time.
Right.
Be prepared for any issues or problems. So if somebody didn't get that ballot they requested, then is there still time to request it again or check with you, or should they just plan on trying to figure something else?
Sure, definitely. Obviously call our office. We have a couple different phone banks we're setting up. Every week we're adding kind of like another phone bank. So right now we have two going. Next week we'll have three. The next week we'll have four. Finally at the end we'll have five. And it's just adding people to answer calls as we get closer and closer. If you call our office, and we do have, you know, we do have on record that we sent you that ballot, but you don't have it, we can send out a second ballot, but that cancels the first ballot. Therefore, that first ballot cannot be turned in that envelope. It will have it'll show up red when we get it. We won't be able to take it. So you can call our office, make sure that we have sent it out, verify that we've received it once you sent that back. If you want to check and verify that, our number is 546-2154. We also have another number, the 834-8222, which is on our website for ballot by mail FAQs. You're welcome to call in and get that information. But yeah, the planning is what we're really trying to get people to do. And that includes knowing where you're going to vote, making sure you have your updated registration. You can view sample ballots on our website. You can pre-fill them. You can take them in with you to refer to them when you're in the ballot, in the ballot booth. So we're really trying to get people to think ahead. And we would love to see really high turnout during early voting and high turnout the whole time, but the majority early voting, so that when we do get to election day, the majority of our voters have voted. And that's just for the people that maybe couldn't get in before then or had a reason that they weren't able to do that. Because that's the last minute. I mean, that's really the last option for voting. But one of the things that we are doing this year a little different on election day is we're using vote centers, which was approved by the Secretary of State. That is a program that's just basically similar to early voting, where you can go to any location. So normally on election day, you would have to go to the precinct you're registered at. That would be your last option. But on election day now, you can pick between 151 locations. And so that's a big change. You've got all of these options. If your site were to have a long line or something like that, you're able to get on our website or get on our mobile app and find the closest ones to you using the geolocator and the wait times. And like I said, with 151, there's so many places that you could pick from on election day.
Oh, that's remarkable. So yeah, people have many more options and they can check on the website if their normal polling place is crowded like somewhere else. That's a real convenience. You're making it easy for everyone.
We're trying.
But having said all that, what kind of challenges do you face?
So, I mean, a lot of the challenges have been the constant change of what the procedures are going to be. So, you know, obviously early on, even in March, right after the primary, we started to hear about COVID, the pandemic, and what was going to happen. And we were able to get our primary in basically just under the deadline of all of the, you know, exposure of COVID. And so we pushed we got our runoff pushed back till July. And so a lot of it was just, one, running an election in a pandemic, which we'd never done before, and no one we knew had. So getting voters the information they needed, making sure that we were able to get as much PPE that we could get, you know, the protective equipment to the sites, making sure we have the staffing. And then once we kind of figured out how we were going to do that, just really adjusting to everyday changes that we've been seeing. I mean, the last month has just been full. Every day it's this court case or that court case or this proclamation or that proclamation. And so it's been so fluid. That's for us really been the hardest part, is that normally at this point, everything's been set. We're not changing gears 6 days before something starts, 3 days before something starts, or not knowing if we're even going to start. I mean, all of those things have been, okay, well, what do we do? Kind of having a contingency plan on that side of it. But you know, we've been really lucky in this county. One, our commissioner's court's incredibly progressive. They're always concerned, how can we get voters to the polls? What can we do? They're very supportive of our department. Our political parties have done a fabulous job of making sure that they've got the poll workers ready to go on that side of it. We've had, even in the time of a pandemic, we've had so many organizations who have, you know, wanted us to come on and talk about what's coming up and what to expect and things like that, so that we can get information out to voters, even as it's changing and most up-to-date information. So it's been tough in that way, but this election has brought so much interest that we're able to really reach out to people in ways that we haven't been able to do before. I mean, just really going into all these meetings and organizations and talking, especially, you know, virtually, now that we're doing everything virtually, reaching out to people and that might not have been able to come to a meeting can do it from their house. And so there's definitely, it's different, but we're still able to get a lot of information out there as best as we can.
That issue of the poll workers, I mean, they tended to be in the past traditionally older volunteers, and there's real concern across the country that younger people wouldn't step it up when some people decided it wasn't safe to do that. What are we seeing? Do we have enough people?
Yeah, we're not seeing a lot of that that dropout rate that we've heard from other counties. And I don't know exactly why that is, but we have a lot of our people returning that are still wanting to do it, that are still excited, still engaged. Our trainings we started this week with early voting trainings. They've been full. So part of that, we've talked to some of them that worked in July or had friends work in July that said, you know, they felt safe. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to make sure our poll workers felt safe and our voters felt safe. So that was our number one goal for July on a much smaller scale, and then really see what worked and expand for November. And we heard back from them that they felt safe. Voters felt safe. You know, they called us and, you know, said, thank you. I felt, you know, really safe. Everything was getting disinfected. Everybody was masked. And the same with our poll workers. You know, they really felt, I think, that they were able to operate with safety, when, you know, with those safety precautions. And so we have not seen that. It's not election day yet, obviously, but we just have not seen, we've seen more interest in working, in all honesty, just because it's, you know, these elections, the presidential elections, are always easier to recruit people, even though you need more people. It seems easier. People are just really, really into it. They're amped up for the election.
Especially this one.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about another thing that's been in the news, and it's important to let people know. This issue of people who say, well, I just want to go check things out and be a poll watcher. Explain that process. You can't just walk in off the street and go inside and wander around in a polling place.
No. So the poll watcher issue that's kind of come up in the last, I would say, 7 to 10 days, because there's ads running that are saying, hey, would you want to be a poll watcher for this campaign? Or would you want to do this? Or you want to do that? They're really trying to almost recruit poll watchers. So there's poll watcher is this term that I think is not being used, at least correctly, as far as election administration is concerned. The Texas Election Code addresses poll watching, and basically what you need to do if you're going to be a poll watcher, when we talk about poll watching, is you're appointed by either a party, a candidate, or campaign. You have to present a certificate to the judge, the election judge on site. You are allowed to sit there and watch as poll workers voters are being processed. You're not allowed to talk to a voter. You're not allowed to obstruct anything. You can ask questions of the judge only. So it's very, you're not allowed to use recording devices. It's very different than I think when people are talking about, oh, there's going to be all these poll watchers. What if they're blocking the driveway? What if they're, you know, obstructing the election? What if they're screaming and I feel intimidated? So that's a different group, right? When we talk about poll watchers, when people ask us about poll watchers, we're talking about someone who comes in, sits there, watches the process, and basically asks questions of the judge on processing ballots if they have a question. That's it. It's very, it's just a much more, I guess, reserved type of position. It has not erupted into anything like that. I think when these guys are talking about poll watchers and we're hearing all this, that's almost more of like our electioneers or people who stand outside. They still have to be 100 feet from the door. Because of social distancing, they should not be coming within 6 foot of a voter. So that's still going to be regulated as best as we can. And they're not allowed to use sound amplification devices within 1,000 feet. They're not allowed. So there's a balance that we have to strike between a First Amendment right to promote your candidate or campaign, and then also the obstruction of the election and voter intimidation. And right now we're working on a program, a plan with our county attorney, our district attorney, our local law enforcement, on probably having some sort of presence at every, at least early voting, and probably on election day as well. Just to be there in case something happens. We don't want anybody being intimidated by having law enforcement there. They're not there to do anything with the election. They're not going to be, you know, doing anything that's going to prohibit people from voting or anything like that. And we're hoping they can kind of just blend into the crowds, not wear their formal uniform, just be there for the off chance that something, if people are getting out of hand.
So that's good to know about security. What about, I mean, right now, it seems like we're all spending a lot of time, journalists, and of course you, heading up the elections office, on misinformation and myths and, you know, people who are, how are you combating this, and what can someone do if they've seen something on social media and they're just not sure, is that true or not?
Right. And the hard part is, you know, we see a lot of national coverage and things like that, and every state is different. And that's one of the things that I think starts misinformation right from the beginning. And, you know, we get calls all the time about, now we're getting calls about like these naked ballots, this naked ballot issue that's happening in Pennsylvania, where, you know, they've ruled if you don't use the secrecy envelope, then they're not going to accept your ballot by mail. Well, our secrecy envelope is for the voter secrecy only. If they don't return it in the little white envelope, in the yellow envelope, you know, we still accept it. The only envelope they have to do is the carrier envelope, which they sign. That other envelope is completely for their own benefit. So it starts with this national coverage and 50 different ways to run elections, right? That's kind of where it begins. And then we tell people, you know, not only is every state different, every county is different. I mean, we follow the same laws, but we may have different procedures. So honestly, I can't express enough to you, visit our website at epcountyvotes.com. And I know people are being overwhelmed with how much information is there, because there is a lot. But take some time. I mean, that we have all of the stuff about the ballot by mail. We have everything about the curbside options. We have everything about the drop spot, our early voting locations. Everything is on there. And we add more every day. More, you know, we hear somebody that says, well, I couldn't find the drop spot because I, you know, turned here. All right, then we update our map and we kind of go, I mean, we're tweaking it nonstop, whatever we can do to get as much information. And then call our office. We keep adding people, and I know the phones are, they're busy. I mean, we're here 7 a.m. to, you know, to almost 10 p.m. every night, calling people back even once we close to the public. So, And that's something that we, you know, we know we will be doing for the next 26 days, and we're willing to do that. So call us. Things you see on social media, I would say more often than not, are not accurate. So one, it may not be the same here in the state. It may not be here the same in the county. I think there's always this effort to do some misinformation. I do believe some of that is malicious and intentional. And so call us. Honestly, we'll give you the right information and we're happy to answer questions. And we understand how much is changing for this election than any election you've seen. And you know, we want to make sure that voters feel safe and they have the information and they're not concerned with items that aren't really going to affect, with issues that aren't going to affect.
Yeah, all good advice. That is, there is a lot of information, but it's a very user-friendly website. If very clearly marks what you're looking for, you can find it. And you do answer the phones, which is nice because these days it's hard to get any human being on the phone for any reason. So that's really appreciated. To finish up, a couple things. I mean, you mentioned, and we know the FBI has said locally and nationally that there is an effort to disrupt or provide disinformation. So voters mm-hmm. should be conscious of that. Aware, and there are places to go and get tips on how to watch out for that. And like you said, just verify with the county elections office, is this true or not?
Right.
Having said that, what would you want people to know about? I mean, elections in this country have been, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, oh, fraud, and we don't know if we'll believe the results. But you have not seen that. We have not seen that nationwide on a large scale. They run for the most part fairly smoothly. They're trustworthy. Explain that to people.
So everybody, you know, the term election fraud, I think is so wide. You know, people will say, oh, well, that's election fraud, or oh, that's election fraud, or that's election fraud. And, you know, I mean, they'll say, well, we think there's election fraud. And we'll say, well, is it that someone's impersonating someone at the polling site, or is someone filling out applications for ballot by mail, or this and that? No, they sent me a piece about my opponent and it's not true. Or, you know, I mean, there's people use this term just for anything that really is maybe questionable, or they don't like with elections. But I've been an election administrator since 2006, and I have not seen widespread fraud in this state or the state I worked in prior. There's just not the data to back that up. However, and the FBI will tell you this, and DHS will tell you this, the number one way that people are able to, you know, push this information is with misinformation, right? That's the easiest thing to do. I mean, it's easier than getting into people's election systems. It's easier than recruiting 20,000 people to have some sort of advanced voter fraud on by mail or something like that. Is complete disinformation, misinformation. And, you know, we've heard that was in 2016, obviously one of the big things people were trying to do, and all of these, like, you know, whatever bots that came in, and there weren't even real people. And so that part of it, the misinformation is probably the biggest piece, in my opinion, of an attempt on obstructing an election, of an attempt on getting people to not have what they need in order to vote with the right information. And so for us, I mean, our system is paper-based. We produce paper ballots. Everybody's moved away from, you know, any of the electronic voting, or try to at least, if they have the funding. We have done paper ballot manual recounts where we tabulate our results with the paper, and they've been one for one match every single time. And so we've had two recounts. We just finished one this summer for the Congressional District 23 on the Republican ticket. They brought in their own people, the state did, and they matched one for one. So, you know, with that paper base, we hold those for 22 months. And if we need to bring them out by a judge's order, we do, on a recount or contested election or something like that. So, you know, we always tell people just, like, register, research, remember to vote. That's like the three things, and really get your information. Otherwise, we are here to help, and we want to be there. We want to make your voting experience positive.
Thanks to Lisa Wise, El Paso Elections Administrator, for taking time out of her busy schedule to bring us up to date this election season. A big thanks to our audio engineer for the weekend, Sam Cassiano, and thank you for listening. I'm Angela Cocherga.
Support for local production of The Weekend on KTEP comes from the estate of Maxie Templeton.